You are listening to the Glass Cannon Network, the premier source for role-playing game entertainment. Welcome to Cannon Fodder, a behind-the-scenes look at the Glass Cannon Network.
Going on, Nash. Welcome back to Cannon Fodder. It's your good buddy Joe O'Brien.
And hello, my name is Troy LaValle.
Troy is in the middle of writing an email, as is obvious. He didn't even know the show started.
All right, so I wasn't writing an email, but I put this card up on eBay, sports card.
And we're doing a show.
Well, here's the thing. I put it up there, and I normally have a buy it now price, and I set the price based on what they call in the industry comps. What has it sold for lately? You put it up there as the comp. Well, this particular card, when I put it up a week ago, it really wasn't worth enough for me to put the comp price up. So I'm like, you know what? I'll do an auction. I'll do a 7-day auction, and let's see if I actually make a couple extra bucks on it. Well, there was a big trade in the NBA, and known piece of shit Kyrie Irving got traded from the Nets to the Mavericks. And the guy behind him has basically been elevated to a larger role and put up, like, he broke a couple records in the past couple days. So anyway, some guy offered me like a couple bucks for the card. I'm like, why am I getting this offer right now? And then I look and I realize he's lighting it up. So now I'm like trying to revise the offer. I'm like, there's no longer an auction. Now it's a $30 card and I can't do it. So that's what I was doing while the music was playing.
Thrilling start to this fodder from Wednesday, February 8th, 2023. A known, massive NBA fan sports crossover to our audience. And so I'm sure everybody's really excited and knows the name of that player on the Nets, whom I don't know.
Cam Thomas.
Cam Thomas.
Most people don't realize this, but Cannon Fodder started out as an NBA sports card podcast.
Yes, it did. It evolved over time.
It really has changed.
It really geared toward like our main hobby of gaming. But initially we wanted to do a podcast about NBA sports card trading.
It's fun to get back to our roots, though.
It is. It is fun. That's what this that's what this year's fodder is all about.
Back to the roots. That's 2023 for the Glass Cannon Network. Get back to our roots.
Get back to the roots.
Speaking of roots, you ever seen the movie Roots?
I never have.
Neither have I.
I hear good things.
You know, LeVar Burton is like the main character, I think.
I did not know that.
Yeah, LeVar Burton.
It is an exciting time here at the Glass Cannon Network. You and I got this show started literally an hour late because for an hour we've been just gabbing like a couple old ladies about all the exciting shit that we have going on. This is, I mean, there is so much for this FOD to like, we could do that FOD thing where we cross over into territory of like things we should not have been talking about because we're so excited. We're going to talk mostly news and then we're going to talk some RPG stuff, but not really We Are Stupid, as we didn't really have much in this week's episode to break apart in terms of rules. A lot of role play again, but we'll get into some juicy role play stuff. But first, kicking it off, big news, the Glass Cannon Network. You remember a little game called Dune? Something the Imperium?
Adventures in the Imperium?
Adventures in the Imperium.
I am familiar with that game. I played it.
You
last
played
year.
It. You ran it, in fact. You split a 10-episode series GMing with Jared. He did 5, you did 5. You remember this little game, little show called Inherit the Sand?
I homebrewed it. You know what's funny is someone at Modiphius reached out to me after the series ended and asked if I wanted to write up that module to have it published. And I have been too busy to even like get back to that conversation.
You didn't even respond to the email.
Oh, no, I responded. I was like, yeah, sounds great. And then he was like, all right, well, here's what we could do. And that was a year ago. And I was like, I'm just too fucking busy, man.
Well, that's a shame. Those of you that missed Inherit the Sand the first time around, it has hit its own RSS feed for the first time. I'm not saying it's migrated off of Glass Cannon Network Presents. It's still there for a limited time, but it has now been released on its own feed, similarly to as we've done with Get in the Trunk and Time for Chaos, Voyagers of the Jump. Now, Inherit the Sand has its own RSS feed. So if you've never heard the show and you want to get a little Dune in your life, it was a great series, like you said, homebrewed, that even the Modiphius people were like, this should be a module.
It was really fun. You know, when you look back, obviously, the session zero, Jared and I are running everyone through character creation. And then I do the first episode, the first five episodes. And then we flash forward in time like a generation and how much has changed for that house. And then Jared runs the second half of the episodes. It was really, really fun. Cool system, too.
It's a classic Dune tale.
It really
is. Classic Dune tale. Yeah, you guys did a great job of making it fresh and different, but like hitting on the tropes that make Dune great. And so, yeah, it was a great series. I actually produced a few of those episodes. So I was just like, I was behind the STX for a few of those, and I thoroughly enjoyed them. So Friends of the Pod, we mentioned last week, that one shot that we did with Paula Deming and Mary Lou. That was so fun, the 2E one shot, and we said it was going to release on YouTube, but it had not, and that was just due to copyright issues, a few things we had to get sorted out with YouTube, but it got squared away, and now it's available, right? I think it's up yeah. and running on Paizo's channel. If you want to watch the video of that, we released the audio on this Glass Cannon Network or Glass Cannon Podcast feed,
yeah.
So you could hear it there, but if you wanted the video, it's on YouTube, but you got to go to Paizo's channel to find it. That's the only tricky part.
Yeah, it's like, that's how Friends of the Pod has worked, and it's one iteration before this, is like when we did it with Seth Skorkowski, Seth put it on his channel. We wanted to do the same thing with Paizo, but we forgot, like, we have all these licenses that we just can, that we have, and so when YouTube is like, wait a minute, where'd that music come from? We can be like, well, we have this license. So when Paizo tried to upload it, they got hit with all these dings, and we were like, give us a moment. We have to try and figure this out. Because we really wanted to put it on their channel to try and bring in some new fans to the niche. And so that's why there was a little bit of a delay. But it was cool the way they did it. I don't know if you watched on Monday, but they like premiered it. And so there were people watching it for the first time, probably all 5 hours just sitting there.
Oh, cool.
It was like 40, 50 people. Yeah. But it was great. So yeah, if you want to see that really, really fun sesh, and it's available, at least right now, only on Paizo's YouTube channel.
We have a big update for Gatewalkers, and very excited to talk about that. But first, Glass Cannon Labs is back this week. Tomorrow, we're playing Cyborg, right? Are you still
yes.
doing it? Are you
yeah, I'm quit? Still doing it. I'm still doing it. Yes. I'm going to start prepping tomorrow, an hour before the show.
Well, that's how it should be. I mean, Cyborg is built that way. You don't have to prep much. You just get in there and start playing. Labs 2, that's what it's built around.
I'm not going to be on, man. Don't make me feel like I got to be on.
You don't got to be on. You don't got to prep anything. Rob Kirkovich is coming back. Excited to play with him again. Who else is in that one? Is it Jason Charles Miller? It's Jason Charles Miller, right? And Rob and Skid and I. So yeah, it's going to be a fun crew.
I'm trying to get Rob out to Gen Con this year. I think he's going to do it.
He should.
And I know JCM will be there. I can't fucking wait. I mean, we've been talking so much Gen Con stuff just in the past 48 hours, and now I'm getting like legit excited for it, even though it's 6 months away.
Yep. Jared will be out there. I was talking to Jared about it, logistics yesterday. Exciting stuff. It's so funny. Back in the day, we never thought about Gen Con until a couple months before Gen Con or the month before Gen Con. And that was just to buy air tickets and try to scramble around for an Airbnb, you know, 15 miles from the convention center.
Where you and I would share a king size bed. And Skid slept in the shower.
Yep. Not even an exaggeration. Not even an exaggeration. But now we, as we do the exhibitor space and all that kind of stuff, and we do events and we try to get sponsorships and everything like that, it's the work for it begins in December, and most of it's ironed out by February and kind of done. And then you just sit and wait for Gen Con to come. So a lot of those things are well underway. And you and I, that was part of our hour before this show recorded. Things we can't talk about are the things that we're planning show wise for Gen Con. And we're,
oh my God,
so excited.
Oh my God. It is going to be, if we pull this off, it's going to be awesome. It's going to be, you have to come to Gen Con. We're going to be doing so much stuff. And if we're able to expand the booth size, we have some really fun plans in store for that as well. So, I mean, if you ever
want to. We have plans at the booth that should hopefully, that are not just shows, but are interactive and stuff like that with you guys, with the niche. And then we have plans for a show that, if it comes to light, will be unlike anything we've ever done.
Yeah, and it's going to be multiple shows and then multiple things in the booth. If you ever wondered, like, should I go to Gen Con? Yes, and this is the year to do it.
This is the year to do it. What else? Simbarum is going to return next week.
Yes.
So part two and it'll be the finale. We'll finish that one part, that one shot next week. And Jared's returning, and Ross and Josephine. So everybody's back. They're available, and we're rocking next week. So tune in right on our twitch.tv/theglasscannon. It's 2 p.m. Eastern on Thursdays. We're rocking the Glass Cannon Labs. All right, let's get to Gatewalkers. This is an update. Last week, you and I were in – last Wednesday, when Cannon Fodder was airing, you and I were in New York City, in Queens, in Long Island City, looking at spaces. Mm-hmm. And why don't you give the folks an update?
Well, we released a video yesterday on YouTube that gave you a little behind-the-scenes look at our journey. And we put an offer in. They countered, and we accepted. And so we are –
we've got a space, it seems, unless they look at our financials and be like, wait a minute.
You can't afford this. Yeah,
that's you're playing Pathfinder for a business? we're not letting you in here.
Yeah, so this is happening. Looks like we're going to be moving in sometime in March. And then, like, my God, the amount of stuff that needs to be done. I mean, this is what we're doing. It's like, okay, find the space. That was the huge first hurdle.
And it's a raw space.
It's very raw, which is what we wanted. We wanted a wide open raw space that we can do whatever the fuck we want with. Well, now it's like step one, go to the city and look for spaces. Step two, find a space. Step three, sign the lease, all that shit. Okay. Now, step 99 is record the first episode of the new Glass Cannon podcast. Now we've got to work out steps 4 through 98 and start banging them out over the next 30 to 60 days. It's a lot. It's exciting. It's a little nerve-wracking, but we've got such a great team in place right now. I just feel like right now with so much exciting stuff that we have going on, I really feel like we can do anything. So I'm excited to see this come together. I am like almost ready to start fucking recording too. So, it's gonna be an exciting time. We're still aiming for spring of 2023, but I don't want to give any dates and get people excited or nervous. But I have a date in mind.
Well, like you said, there's 98 steps, and I can guarantee you whatever date you have in mind, it's going to be later than that. Guarantee it.
It's possible.
So feel free to say it on air, and I'll tell everyone.
I'm
right
not gonna
now
say it. That I'm it not won't gonna say it. I'll tell you after the show.
It will be. You know, like you said, there's 98 steps. Any one of those could be fouled up through no fault of our own. And so it could delay things a little bit. But yeah, there's a lot of things that have to happen in order. And we are creating that rundown over the next 3 weeks. And then we're going to, bam, just get in there and get to work. I'm very excited to be back in a space playing in person. I've never played in person with Kate.
Really? Yeah, I guess none of us.
Right?
Have, right?
We've never played.
No, you did. You played in fucking Glass Cannon Live Philly.
Yeah. But that's just on a stage with a bunch of people. I don't know. It's a little different.
Yeah.
Sitting around a table and just playing. But
what I was going to say is the first day of summer is June 21st. So as long as it releases between June 20th, we didn't lie.
That is technically true. June 20th is spring 2023.
Last time I checked.
It's like when a video game releases like Q3 and it releases on September 30th. You know? Like, okay, all right.
You win.
It's so funny. Like, you can release something summer 2023 and it can literally come out September 20th. And dude, that is summer.
I don't know if you're ready to jump into the other thing, but more news. Glass Cannon Live, we are like rounding, circling the wagons on finally locking in dates and cities. It's kind of all happening very, very quickly. So hopefully we'll have on sales happening. Maybe within the next couple of weeks, because we do want to bring back the tour in April.
Well, a lot of people were asking why we're not on tour right now, and this studio space is a large reason for that. And so we got to take this, like you said, 30 to 60 days is really going to be zoned in on getting the studio space up and running, getting everything squared away so that we're ready to record a great first episode. And then right after that, April, we're planning on being back out on the road.
Yeah. I mean, because that we want to be able to keep the Strange Aeons party going and get out on tour. So if we are doing a show in late April, I want those tickets to be on sale for at least 2 months. So hopefully the next couple of weeks, we're really, really close. I want to lock in all the way through Gen Con so we could just release all those tickets all the way through August. But we're doing the best we can. I'm really excited to get back on the road. I don't like going too long without getting in front of the niche.
I agree with you. One more thing before we move on to the RPG stuff, which we're about to dig into. There is one minor thing that I just want to mention, which is the employee lounge. I mentioned it before on Fodder a couple weeks ago, letting people know if they didn't know. You're actively streaming Dark Souls and Skyrim right now. Yeah. I'm streaming Dead Space right now. Skid is streaming Xenonauts 2 right now. It's been really pumping in there, and we've been having a good time. If you haven't checked it out, head over to twitch.tv/GCN Employee Lounge and follow us there so you can make sure to get notifications when we go live. We were actually talking in a meeting on Monday about nailing down a schedule for that and trying to be a little bit more time sensitive. But right now it's been fun because we could be like, oh, this lunchtime, I can just go. I can go live. Or yeah, this happy hour, I can just go live. I'll do it now.
It's been a lot of fun. And like, we've got a really good crowd in there. You and I did some back to backs the last couple Fridays.
Yeah. Double header. Yeah.
Double headers. Like, if you've got the time to just chill or you're at work and you're allowed to watch Twitch, it really must make the rest of the day just fly by listening to us goof off. So yeah, we are thinking about trying to find a way to schedule it so you can set your watch to it. It's just a little tricky, but we're going to try out something.
Yeah. Right now, the fun part has been not being pressured to do it at a certain time when you have a lot of work obligations. Like, if you can get those squared away, give yourself a little breathing room, and you can stream for fun, that's what we've been doing, and it's been working out really well. But we will try to get at least a few sessions scheduled each week.
And we've been doing the Degenerate Dungeon there on Sunday mornings. That's obviously, with football season coming to a close, the dungeon will, we're going to figure out what happens with the dungeon now. We're going to do NCAA and baseball run lines or what. But we are going to do a Super Bowl special. It's this Saturday night, right?
This Saturday night, yeah.
Live. And the last time we did a night dungeon, it went for 4 hours and we all got a little tipsy-rooney. So this is going to be a fun one to watch me antagonize these Eagles fans the night before their prom.
Oh, it's going to be great. All right, let's get into what normally would be We Are Stupid, but I'll read Eric's email word for word. Didn't catch any rules issues this week, but I already have two guesses for things I'll find next week. So something's brewing. Something's brewing that he knows we're going to screw up, which is just great. He's going to let us make our own mistakes, Troy, and learn from them.
That's great. I wonder what he could think. Does he have a copy of the book? Is he looking at like the 1E version of Strange Aeons while he's doing this?
Maybe, maybe not. During the test phase of this, I did a test phase with him where we were trying to get on the same page, because there's actually a lot of different ways you could go about doing this. And one of the things I said was, I'm not interested in you pointing out things Troy did wrong with a monster, because I can't really say that on air if it was something Troy decided to do differently with a monster. So let's keep it to just general Pathfinder core rules and advanced rules, but things that are not monster stat block dependent, right?
Yeah.
Things where you're like, oh, he missed that they have this special ability. It's like, let Troy bring that up if he remembers it. And otherwise, we'll just focus on the mechanics that players need to worry about.
Yeah.
So yeah, anyway, he said, I love that he didn't say, I already have guesses for things I'll find next week. He said, two guesses for, like, he has an exact number in mind, which means he's definitely zeroing in on something. So we'll see what happens next week. But I've got one question for you, just out of that episode that I just have to ask. Feel free to say no. Feel free to say no comment, but I'd like for you to be honest with the Nash.
Oh, boy.
Nestor Bin Lay. Does he return in the written adventure, or did you just bring him back so you could do that voice again? Be honest!
He returns in the written adventure.
Does he really? Nestor Bin Lay is hanging out with the elves in the woods?
Yeah. I mean, I took a little creative liberties because they don't really give you... I think the reasoning in the book was just kind of like, he's there. And I was like, oh, let's make it a little more juicy. But yeah, he is in there. And he's not as ridiculous in the book. He just kind of happened at the indie show. But, you know, he's important. He's important to the narrative, you know? So it was fun to have him
completely
back.
Belied by his voice.
The whole time, what was fun is because, like, when we did the indie show and he turned into such a ridiculous character, I was like, they're going to have so much fun when he returns later. They must have been like, well, thank God we're done with this guy. And then
it was just an amazing moment to me. I loved it because you were like, and out of the woods, bring the traveler. And like, out of the woods walks Nestor Bin Lay. And it's silence from all the players. Right. Who you originally met in the Enchanted Forest on a limb or something like that. And right when you get to a certain point and you can tell it dawns on Matthew and he goes, oh, no.
Hello, my friends. Hello, my friends.
Did you find Travis Oliver? The hunter we were looking for? Oh, my God.
Yeah, you guys don't know, like, if I'm like, I can't just be like, and it's Nestor Bindley and expect you to know who that is.
No, we're not those kind of players.
You're not those kind of players. But, like, I knew the description would get you. Oh, it was fun having him back.
The take reaction
this
wand
in this ring.
It's such a preposterous voice. Well, I wanted to bring up something to chat about since we don't have rules to dig into today. And this is a general RPG topic that I feel like we could have a good solid debate on. I love a good debate. And this comes in to game design, the game design area. And it's actually based on a tweet that I saw go out from Owen Casey Stevens a few days ago. He put out a tweet that said, if a typical TTRPG PC makes a typical attack against a typical foe, how often do you think that attack should hit? 50% of the time? 75% of the time? And then the follow-up question is, how many attacks do you think a typical PC should make on average to defeat a typical foe? So it's a really interesting game design question. I know this is something you've been thinking a lot about, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts on it. I didn't see you respond or anything like that, and I'd like to know where you stand on that topic.
Yeah, I mean, I've been thinking a lot about this because I'm kind of like, one of my many little side projects is trying to fucking write a game for us to play. And so when I saw that question come up, I'm like, oh man, that is such an interesting question. My gut reaction before I really thought about it was 50% of the time. I was like, I think a typical person against a typical monster, you could have a 50-50 shot. But that seems a little averse to fun. You know, you think about baseball, like if you have four at bats in a game and you get one hit per game, you're an above, even you're hitting for average, but that means you're an above average player in Major League. If you get two hits a game, like you can't sustain that for the entire season. No one has ever hit 500. And
if you got two hits per game, you would nearly double the greatest hitters of all time. Like, right, you know what I mean? Right. Like in terms of average.
Yeah. People that are getting, going 2-for-4, 3-for-4, 4-for-4 every once in a while. I mean, these are your elite hitters, but they're still.
But then even they go 0-for-4 for like four games in a row.
Right. So, but I try and like adapt that to this model as well, because if that was the case, then it should only be 25% of the time. But then you're like, if I feel like you're never hitting.
That's what it would feel like.
50% felt good to me. It felt like the trying to translate that baseball statistic into hitting. I was like, 50% seems a little more fair, but I think I've settled on 65%.
Hmm.
Yeah. To me, that feels really it's just a little better than half. A little better than half, because even at 65%, you're still going to be missing a ton. And for enemies that have a ton of hit points, you're going to have to hit a lot. And if you're only hitting 65% of the time, you better hope your teammates are hitting when you're missing. So 65 just felt good to me.
How many hits should an average typical foe take before going down?
Oh, man. Average typical. So what does that mean? Because like, what is an average typical player? There's an average typical third level character, and then there's an average typical 12th level character, and the monsters they're going to be facing.
Oh, it all balances out.
I guess it all balances out, right?
From a game design standpoint, it should in a certain way. I mean, you don't want it to feel like there's no difference between third level and 12th level in terms of probability. That might not be as fun. But the point of the question is, should a average foe take 3 hits and go down? Should they take 8 hits before going down? Should PCs have to combine for 6 hits on them before they go down?
I feel like an average fight, let's say, and these are all just arbitrary things we're picking, but it also is years of doing this and knowing what feels right. To me, a 5-round fight is your typical good fight. It's not a boss fight that goes 12 rounds. You know, it's not a squash encounter that goes 2 or 3. So let's take a 5-round fight as an average encounter. If you've got 4 players that are hitting 65% of the time, then that means, I mean, I could do the actual math, but you're probably getting 1.5 hits per round times 5. What is that?
6? Roughly?
Yeah.
That would be 4. In 4 rounds, you'd have 6
7
hits.
And a half rounds. I mean, 7.5 hits. So, and 1.5 was high.
Right, but the,
so
but, seven but, hits. But the idea is that a typical foe would not necessarily, maybe I'm thinking about this wrong, but a typical foe would not necessarily be one foe that they're all hitting.
Right. Well, I guess you could interpret that anyway, right?
Right, right.
If we're just talking about four players versus one monster, everyone of average party level, I think 7 hits in 5 rounds sounds about right.
Okay.
Because if that monster, because now if you think about this in terms of encounter design, that means that monster is hanging for 5 rounds, but it only has one, you know, one opportunity every round to do something, whereas you guys have 4 opportunities. And if it can stand for 5 rounds and do something, to me, it's like if you haven't done something cool in those 5 rounds, then it wasn't meant to be, and the monster goes down. That just feels right. It's very arbitrary, but again, this is coming from years of doing this. That just feels right to me. Do you feel differently?
I do. My gut says that I would want to design a game where the timing is similar to what you're talking about, but where characters hit 75 to 80% of the time, maybe 80% of the time. The balance for that is not difficult. The balance for that really comes down to more hit points, right? So like more hit points, you get the same amount of rounds, but it takes more hits, essentially, is what it comes down to, right? So a higher hit percentage and more hits to take down a creature. I like that in a heroic game. And I think when I say heroic game, I don't mean, you know, playing, for Christ's sake, what is the mythic? I'm not talking about playing Pathfinder with mythic adventures. I'm talking about a classic D20 sword and sorcery, the players play heroes kind of game. Right. I like the idea of hitting a lot and then having that translate into tougher and tougher creatures that can take a similar amount of time. I think 5 rounds is a really good target. So I'm with you there. I just think that missing less makes you feel, not only is it more fun, but it makes you feel like a more competent character. Yeah. Missing half of the time kind of makes it feel like, why is this person a hero? However, I think that there is an interesting alternate side to this, which is we also talk a lot about playing games that are not heroes, where people are regular people, right? The Call of Cthulhu games of the world, Blades of the Dark, that kind of stuff. Like, you're not necessarily, you can't really transcend the amount of damage you're taking or the amount of hits you can even take. Delta Green, for example, one good shot and you're dead, right? Like, those kind of games are fun too. They have their place. I think a game where you are a regular person and you're not supposed to be heroic, I think a 40% hit chance is good. And I think that it should take less to bring something down because you feel how much a blow with a sword or a shot with a gun really damages something that's living and really gives them very limited time to live after that.
Master Nyarlathotep, if you've listened to Time for Chaos, I don't want to spoil anything, but like there was one fight where someone had a shotgun and just like annihilated someone very quickly that like I wish was around longer. But like then you think about it, point blank range, a shotgun would annihilate someone. You
know? Right, right. Even if you're talking about a creature, I don't know the situation you're talking about, but even if you're talking about, I actually do, I'm lying. But even if you're talking about a creature, if it's a living creature that eats and breathes and has blood flowing through it, a point blank shotgun is going to do significant damage.
Right, like a Rottweiler. Those are nasty ass dogs. But if you hit it with a shotgun, it would explode.
Totally. Totally. Oh, dude, so I'm reading this book right now called Endurance, which is a famous book. It's been around for 50 plus years. It's a nonfiction about an Antarctic expedition that went wrong and this crazy adventure story.
I feel like you've read 9 books with the same exact description.
I have. This is the most famous one, and I've never gotten to it.
Are you afraid of like getting stranded? Because I feel like that's 99% of the books you read.
No, I just find stories of people pushed to their limit fascinating. I don't know why. I just find it fascinating. But it was a gift. I got it for Christmas. And so I've been reading it and chipping away at it here and there. And there is a moment talked about in one of the guy's diaries where he's there on the ice. He's walking and he gets attacked by a sea lion, which is like no joke. Like an 1,100-pound sea lion comes up out of the ice and attacks this guy. And he's just running for his life on skis. And another guy comes with a rifle. And that thing takes like like 8 or 9 bullets before it even slows down. You know what I mean? And so like there is all different kinds of levels of monsters where like one bullet's going to take a human being down, but a sea lion can take a bunch of a bear, right? Think of it like a bear. Like you just shoot a bear with a handgun. It's not going to do anything, you know? So there is a lot of variance in this. Let me ask you this in the world of variance.
Yeah.
What we're talking about here is a typical PC and a typical foe. So I'm going to move it to atypical for a minute, but just show you the two extremes within a Pathfinder game. To me, the two extremes represented here are, on one side, you have an encounter with a magic user, a caster of some kind, wizard, sorcerer, whomever, that is utilizing maybe invisibility and summons or mirror image, okay? Extremely difficult to hit, but low HP, low AC. When they get that hit, they go down quick, especially if it's from the Jimmers of the world, right? Like a massive fighter with a massive sword. On the other side, you have an ooze encounter, a massive, disgusting ooze with an AC of 5 and 590 hit points. And everybody is hitting every round, but it's just about chunking that HP down until you finish the thing off. And it's slowly grabbing people, paralyzing them, pulling them in. And it just feels like a death by a thousand cuts kind of idea. Mm-hmm. What kind of encounter do you enjoy more? I know you don't enjoy playing as much anymore, but running more maybe, or you know what I mean? Like which one of those vibes, because that tells you a lot about how you would veer in this thing. Do you enjoy something that's hard to hit, but once you hit it, it's dead, or something that you can hit over and over and over again? It just takes a long time to whittle it away.
You know, I think it's more interesting to do the magic user one, but it's more work to prep. but like I do, it's so much easier to run the ooze. And so I kind of tend towards that because when I don't have to focus on all the other stuff, it allows me to play a little bit more. But I think if all things being equal, I prefer the caster.
You prefer hitting less, but when you do hit, it means something.
Yeah. Cause it just feels, it feels like kind of why we play this game. It's like if you're going up against this, like, regular Joe who has all these powers and they're using those powers to keep themselves alive while trying to kill you. You know, it's more exciting to me to finish that person off. But I don't know. Yeah. It's a tough question to answer because so much of it is dependent on the circumstances. It's hard to take these examples out.
Well, sure. But the truth is this is a game design question.
Yeah.
Because really, if you boil it down, the truth is that the ooze fight and the wizard fight are both equally essential to the game.
Yeah.
You need to be able to have both of those encounters so that it feels like you feel that variance when you're playing the game. But you're still just using the one game system. So the one game system has to allow for that variance of encounters feeling different, percentages feeling different. But, you know, the middle line is all we're talking about right here. And how does the game balance it around the middle? It's an interesting question and it's complicated. Game design is not easy.
No. Do you prefer a D20 or a D100 system now that we've been playing more D100?
I think I prefer D100. And not in terms of just purely from a game design standpoint, not in terms of the typical D100 games that we play and what those system settings are like. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about I like looking at a skill or an ability or a stat and seeing a percentage and knowing my percentage ability to hit that. It's just straightforward. Anybody who is new to the game can pick it up and understand it very well. The typical D20 system where you're adding bonuses to get against a DC, I feel like a lot of the time, I mean, it's just a more complicated way to get to the same result, which is your percentage chance. Your percentage chance changes. What a D20 system allows is a lot more variance of how that percentage changes versus certain different creatures. However, these games can boil in penalties of minus 20%, penalties of minus 40%, bonuses of plus 20%. Or what was the other thing? In Cthulhu, when you guys in Time for Chaos, you would like roll the tens die twice and take the lower. Like it allows
die and penalty die.
Yeah, penalty die. Like it allows for severe penalties or severe bonuses on certain situations so that, you know, you're not stuck in the scene. You know that every time you shoot your gun, you're going to hit 60% of the time. Like it allows for that kind of variance, which I think is fun. Right now, I think I enjoy those systems because I don't have to do that added math. You just roll the die and you know success or failure right there. But that the whole D6 system is very interesting to me too.
Yeah.
In when we talk about Blades or Star Wars, I like the degrees of success system, which I find interesting. So that's another layer that's like, it's not hit or miss, it's hit. I saw a comment about this. Somebody had a tweet that I thought was interesting, which was hit 100% of the time, and then damage is the variance. You go from anywhere from zero damage to significant damage. And that is sort of feels like Simbarum. When we were playing Simbarum, there was a lot of hits for no damage because it's sort of armor as DR. To me, that also feels realistic. It feels like you can make contact with something, but not actually get it. In the Pathfinder terms, I think when we talk about armor, we talk about hitting something. And hitting, the term hitting actually means contacting flesh, right? Like digging into flesh and bone, as opposed to just making a hit, connecting at all, which is why the original Pathfinder Unchained came out with the armor as DR variant. They had a whole rule system for that, which I always thought was interesting, armor as DR. It means more hits, but then the damage is the variance. So you feel like you hit something, but you just didn't quite bite through or whatever. It's a fun variant.
Then there's RuneQuest, which takes it to a whole new level. Mm-hmm. Which you're like, actually, where did you hit? Well, I hit the left shin. You know,
right,
like
targeting the limbs.
Only has so much armor, and once you get there, you take that leg out. And if you take that leg out, now we roll on a table to see if that person can still walk. It's very interesting. I enjoyed – that was my favorite part of that system, because once you get it into your brain, it's very, very cool and very, very different from any of the games that we played. But like I prefer the D100 just because the more I play Cthulhu, the more I just love it. Same with Delta Green. But the system I'm writing is D20 because I think it's more marketable.
The D100 system also, I should say this because I implied that it doesn't. The D100 systems that we play do have a spectrum of success. I forgot about that because you do have extreme success. What's the middle one? Hard success and
regular success.
Yeah. So you do have degrees of success, which 2E brought in, right? The critical hit, critical fumble, the degrees of success of hits, saves, et cetera, throughout the system, I think offers a lot of fun. Anyway, man, we could talk about this all day, but that was a great topic brought up by Owen Casey Stevens. So thanks for putting that tweet out. It definitely had me thinking. I'm going to do one more question to you out of left field.
Oh boy.
Because I saw something just cross my screen online and I thought, whatever happened to Shadow of the Demon Lord? You were so high on that.
Are you like looking at Owen Casey Stevens Facebook?
Is that what it was from?
Yeah, I mean he was posted about that the other day.
I saw an image and I didn't realize it was from his thing, but I remembered you were pitching it to me and I was like, this sounds awesome. And you were so juiced up about it, and it was definitely going to be on New Game Hudis. And then it just vanished. You never talked about it again.
Out of all the books that I bought when we first were doing New Game Hudis, the only two I didn't play were Dungeon World, I think, and Shadow of the Demon Lord. And Shadow of the Demon Lord was the one I was going to come out of the gate with, but then I pivoted into Cyberpunk and Cthulhu. And then at the end of the year, when I was going to do one more, I almost did Shadow of the Demon Lord, but then I did Something Is Wrong Here instead, just to try something totally different and weird, but it's still sitting there on my shelf and I feel like it's having a resurgence. And when we were at PAX Unplugged, I walked by a booth like of all the new books that they've printed. I think they've like expanded. It's still very, very cool. I just got my copy of the Dark Souls RPG, which I think uses the 5e system. I had ordered it like a year ago, and the hard copy, I got the PDF, I don't know, months ago. I never really spent any time with it. And then I got the hard copy. I was like, this looks amazing. Where I've been playing Dark Souls, I'm way into it. I haven't heard a lot of great things about the Dark Souls RPG. I don't want to judge it because I haven't played it yet, because it looks really fucking cool, but you never hear anybody talking about it. Whereas Shadow of the Demon Lord to me always felt like a Dark Souls type RPG, but with a system that people who are into it really love.
There's a lot of buzz about it.
Yeah, I love hearing that people are way into it. So don't give me an excuse to play it, because that's what Glass Cannon Labs is all about.
Yeah, who knows?
And there's little adventures you can buy online, like for $4, so I don't have to homebrew anything. That would be fun. I remember I read the whole book because I was in the zone just reading RPG books.
It was also like the height of COVID. Like you couldn't even leave your home, basically.
It was easy to read a compendium.
Totally. All right. That is going to wrap it up for us today, guys. Thank you so much for hanging with us on the FOD. Love a good FOD. It's always good to catch up and to keep you guys abreast of what's happening with the studio space and the labs games and everything. And we're looking forward to Professor Eric's comments on episode 62.
I'll see if he's right.
Yeah, we'll see if there were two or more things that were wrong. Until next time, take it easy, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Great time to be in the niche.
Thanks for listening to the Glass Cannon Network. For more podcasts and live streams, visit glasscannonnetwork.com. And for exclusive shows and content you can't find anywhere else, subscribe today at patreon.com/glasscannon.